Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Saturday morning wake-up call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. And for the next 60 minutes, I'll be taking you around and through the world of sports. The call number is 347-215-6180. And first things first, the World Series Game 3 tonight, it looks like they're going to be able to get that game in. It's raining right now in Philadelphia, drizzling, but by 7 p.m., the clouds, it should be cleared up, and they should get that game in for tonight. I know a lot of people were concerned about that, and about that game possibly being postponed to tomorrow, but it looks like they're going to be able to get it in. If not, if they don't get that game in and it is rained out, games 3 through 7 will be played in 5 straight days. That means no off day. The off day, there was an off day scheduled for Tuesday. And, if you're the Phillies, if I'm a Philadelphia fan, I want the game to be played tonight. Because you play a game tonight, Moya will be on the mound. Let's say you go down 2-1, you'll be able to, in game four, you had the option, if you're down 2-1, of, going to Blanton or going to Cole Hamels on short rest. If you win tonight, then you pitch Joe Blanton on game four and wait to Cole and bring Cole Hamels back for game five and possibly for a game seven in relief. He's not gonna pitch, go 7-8 innings in a game seven anyway, regardless of what happens. So you really want to get this game in. As far as this series goes as a whole, I mean, both these teams are very much equal in terms of talent. This series, I'll be shocked if this is not a 7-game series. These two teams match up very well with each other. If you're the Philadelphia Phillies, and I hate to get on them because they haven't won a championship, and I don't know, that franchise, that city has not won a championship in 100 years when you combine all four major sports. But if you're Philadelphia Phillies, you're not winning this series. You are not winning this series by playing small ball, by doing the little things that Tampa Bay does. You're not beating Tampa Bay at their own game. The Phillies are going to have to score some runs to win this series. You saw in game two, Tampa Bay goes out there and scores 4 runs. They score 4 runs without even getting an extra base hit. The Phillies can't do that. Phillies need big innings. You need Jimmy Rollins of the world, the Pat Burrows of the world to get going, and you need them to get going right now. Now, the good thing for a Phillies fan is that Ryan Howard seemed to have some good swings in the game. He has, had a couple hits. Other than his last at bat against David Price, he really had a good game as far as how his swing was going. Game one, he looked lost. Phillies cannot win playing small ball against Tampa Bay. If this series comes down to the team who moves runners over the best, the team who bunts the best, the team who runners home from third without getting a hit, then Tampa Bay is going to win this series easily. I mean, that's what Tampa Bay does. They are, they play small ball as well as anyone in Major League Baseball. They don't need to hit home runs to score. What you saw against Boston was another aspect of their offense, was another weapon that they had. But for the most part, Tampa Bay is a team that likes to bunt runners over. They like to, they play the small ball and they do it extremely well. Also, with your Phillies, something that came out of that game that I don't think was talked about enough was Eric Bruntlett's home run off David Price. And why, was it big? Because in a game where the Phillies lost, because David Price had been, for the most part, through the Boston series and up until game two of this World Series, had been untouchable. I mean, the guy's throwing 97, 98 miles an hour. He has a ridiculous slider. I mean, he's going to be a big-time pitcher in the future, 23 years old. So you get a home run off him, and it knocks that chink of invincibility off him. And that's important because he's going to be a major factor in this series. I still do not trust Tampa Bay not having a shutdown, lockdown closer. is one of the reasons why I picked Philadelphia before this series Brad Lidge. I mean, Philadelphia has in this series a guy like Brad Lidge who, in the eighth or ninth inning, who can get you the ninth inning. You know who's going to be getting the ball. You know he's getting the ball with the lead or with the game being tied. Or if you're in the eighth inning, you're up by one run, you need an extra out, you need a 4 or 5 out save. Brad Lidge is the guy for Philadelphia. You know, Tampa Bay does not have that guy. I mean, you go back last week to the Boston series. They needed four closers. Basically, they needed four guys to get 6 outs in that game 7 against the Red Sox. Philadelphia does not have that luxury of having a guy like Lidge. And I think that will come back to bite Tampa Bay as this series goes along, because Price was looking untouchable up until that point. Brundley hits the home run off of him, and now, you know, coming up in these next couple of games, and it could be tonight if they play in a big spot, those hitters know, hey, this guy can be scored upon. And it wasn't just a bloop single. I mean, when you get taken out of the ballpark as a reliever, that stays in your mind. Now, maybe he bounces back and pitches well. Who knows? I mean, he seems to have a great makeup, 23 years old. He seems to be mature beyond his years in seeing what he did against Boston in that game 7, and also earlier on in that series in game two with Tampa Bay 1. But who knows? I mean, this guy, that home run could affect him. That was a big home run by Eric Brundley. But the bottom line for the Philadelphia Phillies is they have to score some runs. I mean, they have to score early and they have to score often. Philadelphia has won some of these postseason games, whether it be against the Dodgers or against Milwaukee, getting off to good starts. Scoring early. I know Jamie Moore. As far as the motion goes, as far as controlling his emotions on the mound, but those seem to have gotten fixed, and he has been great ever since. Again, this series is flip a coin with these two teams. This is a evenly matched series. It should be a great rest of the series. I know America is going to be hard to hook America in to Tampa Bay because Tampa Bay is a small market. Despite the fact that Philadelphia is a large market, everybody wanted to see, Dodgers Red Sox or Phillies Red Sox or Cubs White Sox, and it's a hard sell for Major League Baseball. It's absolutely a hard sell trying. This series is going to have to go 6 or 7 games for America to get hooked on, bottom line. It's going to have to go 6 or 7 games for that in order for that to happen. And again, I would be surprised. I would be shocked if it doesn't go seven games. If it doesn't go seven games, I'd be shocked. As far as Tampa Bay's pitching rotation, despite what happens with the rain, if it does rain, if it doesn't, their rotation is set. They're gonna go with Garza game three, Sorenstam game four, and probably come back game five with I would think Scott Kazmir, who pitched in game one. And now again, Tampa Bay has it set up perfectly. You want Garza in games three and game seven, those odd number games. You want Garza will be, if there is a game seven, Garza will be on full day's rest. And that would be a major advantage for Tampa Bay to having him pitch. You could have a matchup where you have Garza and Jamie Moyer in a game seven. And I'm sure if that were to occur, that Jamie Moyer would be on a quick hook if you're Charlie Manuel. Because of some of the struggles that he has had in the postseason. Again, the call number is 347-215-6180. You have a lot to do today. A busy day, a busy weekend in sports. College football, of course, also takes center stage. And you have one of these games that have national championship implications as far as this Penn State-Ohio State game goes. Penn State comes in ranked number three in the BCS, which is the most important. Forget about AP, forget about coaches' poll. The BCS rankings is the most important rankings. Penn State is number three, and Ohio State is number nine. And, you know, listen, if you're a Penn State fan, I understand your frustrations, not so much for a lack of respect. I understand that how nervous you can be right now. I mean, your team is playing great. You're 8-0, but you haven't beaten Ohio State. And you haven't beaten Ohio State at Ohio State since 1978, number one. And they have owned you. Ohio State has owned Penn State ever since Penn State made that switch to the Big Ten back in the 1993 season. That's one thing. Second thing is Penn State has an opportunity to finish undefeated, despite what they do, to finish undefeated and still not play for the national championship. Now, in order for that to happen, both Texas and Alabama would have to run the table. And to be honest with you, I don't see both Texas and Alabama running the table. I think one of those teams will be picked off based on the opponents that they play for the rest of the season. I think the SEC and Big 12 have clearly established themselves as a premier, as by far and away the best conferences in college football. Now, of course, had back-to-back years where he did. Took both the AP and coaches national championship at the time when there, of course, was no BCS. So you should be a little. I mean, you have every right as a Penn State fan to be a little nervous. But all you can do as a Penn State fan. All you can do as a Penn State fan is hope that your team handles business tonight, first and foremost, at the Horseshoe against Ohio State. that's all you can do as a Penn State fan. Take care of business and let everything else. Take care of business and let everything else take care of itself. If Penn State wins out, if Penn State wins this game, they will probably play for the national championship. I mean, I think that, again, there's so much football left to be played. I mean, I'm looking at Texas' schedule. Texas, of course, will host Oklahoma State, who, by the way, is ranked number 6 and undefeated. And this will be the third straight ranked team that Texas has played in its main weeks. At some point, you wonder, when will Texas have some type of emotional letdown to where they can't get up for these teams? I mean, in back-to-back weeks, they've beaten Oklahoma and Missouri back-to-back. They'll have Texas Tech next week to complete a run of playing four straight teams who would have been ranked in the top 15. And they still haven't played the Big 12 championship. And they still haven't played the Big 12 championship. So their schedule is still brutal. Alabama, of course, still has LSU. They have Tennessee today, which they should have no problem with. Tennessee is awful this year. But they still at LSU, which would not be easy. And they still have a game where they still have Auburn. And I understand that Auburn's struggling right now. Auburn looks bad. They can't score. Everything looks lost down in Auburn. But you know that is a big time. That is a rivalry. And those rivalry games, how many years did we see Ohio State get spoiled as far as their national championship hopes when they went and played Michigan in years where Michigan really wasn't, you know, vintage Michigan, in years where Michigan was, you know, 8-4 or 9-3, you know, not having championship caliber teams, and still went there, and Ohio State would go down there, or even if the game was in Columbus, and would lose before Jim Trussell got there. That's one of the reasons why Gary Cooper was fired from Michigan. From Ohio State. And they'll have the SEC championship as far as Alabama goes. So you're looking at LSU, Auburn, and probably either Georgia or Florida in the SEC championship. And a lot of people still think Florida is the best team in the conference. I disagree with that. I think from top to bottom, Alabama probably has less holes than Florida from top to bottom all around. But Florida's still a dangerous team out there. And of course Georgia will be at LSU. Georgia is number 7 in the BCS. LSU is at number 13. And that game amounts to what you can call basically an elimination game. Both teams come in with one loss. Either one of those teams loses. Whoever loses that game is done as far as their national championship hopes. I mean, they're finished. And more than likely, they will be finished as far as, you know, possibly winning an SEC championship, which they still have mathematically have a chance, but it would be a difficult climb. But definitely, as far as a national perspective, that is an absolute elimination game. I mean, here's what you need to know about the college football season in a nutshell. You have three teams. Okay, you have three teams that control their own destiny. Texas, Alabama, and Penn State. The first two absolutely entirely control their own destiny in Texas and Alabama. No matter what Penn State does from here on out, if Texas and Alabama win out, they will play for the national championship, period. There's no debating it. They will play for the national championship, and they will have deserved to play for the national championship because they would be undefeated coming out the two hardest conferences in the country. Now, I'm sorry for the Penn State fans, but, you know, that's just the way it is. Unfortunately, we don't have a playoff system like all the other hundreds of sports around. But that's a whole other program for a different day. that's a whole nother program for a different day as far as the college playoff system goes. It's an absolute joke, but it is what it is. But those two teams absolutely control their own destiny. And Penn State, to a lesser extent, controls its own destiny. Penn State wins out more than likely. They definitely will be playing for the in the Rose Bowl, but more than likely, Penn State wins out. They're going to play for the national championship. Just winning Columbus. If you're a Penn State fan, I don't want to hear any Penn State. I don't want to hear any Penn State fan complaints if you don't take care of business in Columbus. It's all about Columbus. As far as your season goes, forget about the BCS, forget about the Rose Bowl. It's all about tonight. You have the opportunity to go on the road against a ranked team. Penn State, I didn't realize this until earlier this week. Penn State has not beaten a ranked team on the road. They've lost their last 10 games against teams that are ranked on the road. So Penn State has an opportunity to go to Ohio State. A lot of people, even though they're favored in this game, a lot of the experts that you listen to still like Ohio State for the most part. And understandably so. Ohio State has been hot. The quarterbacks have been playing well. They seem to have gotten their stuff together after that embarrassing loss to USC back in early September. Beanie Wells is running well. And again, their quarterback has played extremely well. He has a chance to be a star on the college scene. So win the game. I mean, just go out there and beat Ohio State, and then you can start talking, worrying about national championship, possibly. Because after that, if Penn State goes on and beats Ohio State tonight, their schedule after that is, you know, I dare say easy in this day and time in college football, but you know, let's be honest, you know, at Iowa and home games with Indiana and Michigan State, they should be able to navigate that to an 11-0 season. And of course they have the advantage, unlike a team in the SEC, unlike an Alabama or unlike a Texas, they have the advantage of not having to play in a conference championship game. And that's a big advantage. I mean, USC doesn't have to play it in a conference championship game either. It's a big advantage because, you know, that's an extra opportunity that a team has in terms of losing at the end of the season. And you play an 11-12 game season, you think you're done, you think you've accomplished something, then you look up and you have to play a team, and then you look up and you have to play again in your conference championship game against a team that you probably have beaten already in order to get there. And it's tough, it is very difficult to beat a team twice, a good team twice in one season. Very difficult. It's not easy whatsoever. And again, Penn State has that luxury of not having to go through that. I don't think that if Penn State beat Ohio State at Ohio State today and had to meet Ohio State again, let's say in the Big Ten Championship, I don't think they would beat Ohio State again. And I don't think Ohio State, if roles were reversed, would beat Penn State twice in the season. Too hard. The teams are too evenly matched and they're too good. So, again, if you're a Penn State fan, go out there and take care of business. I'm talking like the fans are absolutely going to be playing. If you're a Penn State player, go out there and take care of business on the field. That's all you have to worry about tonight. That's all you have to worry about. Take care of business tonight, and everything else will be, you know, and everything else should take care of itself for the rest of the season. Your season, I mean, you have an absolute, again, a cakewalk. You compare their Penn State schedules in comparison to some of these other teams' schedules, these other top teams. I mean, Oklahoma State, which is undefeated, and I thought the BCS did Oklahoma State wrong by having them number six. They are still undefeated. I mean, how is USC and Oklahoma ahead of Oklahoma State? Both USC and Oklahoma have losses. The only teams that should have been ahead of Oklahoma State are the three teams that are still undefeated and are top teams, and that's of course Texas, Alabama, Penn State. But with that said, Oklahoma State still has, you know, they have Texas today, and they still have to play Oklahoma. Still have to play Oklahoma. And they still have to play Texas Tech. And that's not even including the Big 12 championship. So if Oklahoma State wins out, they will earn their way to a national championship game, which I don't think they will, but if they do, they definitely would have earned it. But that's the problem you have with, I mean, that's one of the major problems that you have with college football. Yes, I have to admit, as somebody who does what I do, it is exciting from week to week to watch these games, and they're basically 12, 13 weeks of playoffs. I mean, week by week, these games take on a whole new level each week because your season can be lost in 1 week. It depends on when you lose. I mean, in college football, you want to lose early so you can get a chance to catch up. I mean, USC loses early. Now USC is in a position where they're number five. They have four teams ahead of them, and all four of those teams are more than capable of losing. If USC wins out, there's a chance, an outside chance, that they can play for a national championship. Ohio State, and as it pains me to say, and I know nobody wants to hear this, because Ohio State has been embarrassed in the last two national championship games. Ohio State still has an outside chance of playing for a national championship. They win tonight and take care of business for the rest of the season. You know, all the teams that are ahead of them still have an opportunity to lose games. Now, I don't think the one thing Ohio State doesn't have going for it is that loss, the loss against USC. I mean, losing to USC, that head-to-head, if it comes down to USC and Ohio State for a match, for a spot in the national championship game, USC is going to get that. Is going to get that artificial tiebreaker based on the fact that they not only beat Ohio State, they manhandled Ohio State back in September. So that's the one thing. Hey, Ohio State lost to somebody else who, you know, another team who wasn't, say, ahead of them per se. Then they would be better off. And then they would have a much better chance of possibly sneaking into a championship game for the third straight year. But more than likely, it's a definite outside chance. But the bottom line is they still have a chance. They still have a chance. I mean, this college football season has a way of working itself out. I still think that everybody will have at least one loss. Everybody. And I'm not even counting the Utahs of the world or Boise State. I'm not even forget about those teams. Those teams don't even count. As far as I'm concerned. I'm talking about the big wigs of college football. The Texases, the Alabamas, the LSUs, the Floridas, Oklahoma States. I think everybody will have at least one loss. You saw LSU last year win a championship with two losses. Now that won't happen this year. I don't think a team will win a championship with two losses this year. But everybody is going to at least have one loss. I'll say at least one. Whether it be the SEC championship, whether it be the Big 12 championship, I expect it to come down to that last weekend of college football season. Coming up, we're going to switch gears a bit and look ahead towards the NBA season, which will start come Tuesday. Yeah, of course, you have a doubleheader on TNT. You'll have Boston hosting Cleveland, and you have the Lakers hosting the Portland Trail Blazers. And I have in front of me here the NBA preview issue from Sports Illustrated. They do an excellent job every year of giving you the goods on all the teams and feature articles on players like Greg Oden, who is the feature this for this particular issue. It's a good arc. I would definitely recommend to read it. Very good article. Here's why I have a problem. And, you know, with predictions, we all make predictions. We all have opinions as sports fans and as, you know, talk show hosts and what have you, analysts and what have you. And half the time we're right, half the time we're right, half the time we're wrong. And you know, predictions can go in any direction. But if you're Sports Illustrated, you come out and predict an NBA Finals matchup of Boston versus San Antonio, which, I mean, it could happen. I mean, San Antonio has won four championships in the last decade or so, and Boston is the defending NBA champions, of course, from last year, and they have everybody coming back a year older, but it's not out of the realms of possibility that matchup could happen. Here's where Sports Illustrated gets themselves in trouble and where they can, I don't know, outthink themselves or contradict themselves. You cannot predict Boston. You can predict Boston. You cannot predict the Spurs to make it to win the NBA championship or to even go to the NBA championship when you have the postseason honors. I'm gonna read this. This is Sports Illustrated. This is Ian Thompson, who has a 5-minute guide in terms of postseason honors, major storylines, eight coaches with a big challenge. And this is all this Ian Thompson, who also oversaw the scouting reports, oversaw, you know, the predictions and what have you on where the teams will finish. He says, most valuable player will be Kobe Bryant. The sixth man of the year will be Lamar Odom. The most improved player will be Andrew Bynum. Okay. I think you know where I'm headed. But then you turn over to scouting reports, it has NBA Finals, Spurs over Celtics, Conference Finals, Celtics over Cavaliers, Conference Finals, Spurs over Lakers. All right. And you have the Lakers as the number one seed, which is no surprise. And maybe, again, I'll come out and say it, because everybody who knows me knows me as a Los Angeles Lakers fan. I'm an objective Los Angeles Lakers fan. I'll tell you that. So I might as well put that out there. You cannot predict the Spurs to beat the Lakers if you're going to have Kobe Bryant as the MVP, Lamar Odom as the sixth man of the year, and Andrew Bynum as the most improved player. Let me tell you something, people. If all those things happen, not only will the Lakers win the NBA championship, but they will break the Chicago Bulls record for wins in the season. I mean, somebody help me with the logic here, please. I mean, maybe it's just me. Help me with the logic here that those three players on that team are going to win those awards, yet the Lakers are not going to make it out the Western Conference. I'll be willing to bet before the season, had I not even saw this, that none of that would happen. I mean, I could see Kobe Bryant being top three, top five in the MVP. I could see Lamar Odom being, you know, one of the better six men. I could see Andrew Bynum, you know, being top two or three in terms of being most improved. I could see that. Maybe one of those things happen. Maybe one of those things happen. But all of them happening and the Lakers not winning a championship, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense. I mean, all those things happen. I mean, the Lakers are not even going to win a championship. They're going to run away with the championship. They're going to absolutely run away with the championship if all those things occur. And as far as, I mean, I just can't see how you can write that. You know, again, if they don't have those three Lakers winning those three particular honors, I wouldn't have thought anything of it as far as them making a prediction that, you know, Boston against San Antonio. I disagreed with it. I wouldn't have thought too much of it. Okay, you can look in five or six different magazines and get, you know, one magazine might have Cleveland, or another magazine might have New Orleans, or even say Utah. I mean, John Hollinger, who's Mr. Stats in terms of the NBA, you know, by his stats, he predicts that Utah will come out the West. He thinks Utah statistically is the best team in the Western Conference. Okay, whatever. I mean, I disagree with that, but and again, you can have a different variety of opinions from different people. Maria, but explain to me that logic from Sports Illustrated. As far as where I see the NBA this season and my predictions of it, I have Cleveland and the Lakers in the finals, and I have the Lakers winning it all. And I have Cleveland beating Boston and the Lakers beating Houston. I just feel, you know, I think that with, you know, I think when you look at the NBA and you look at, you know, you look at those teams who have made the steps of taking the necessary steps of progression. And I'm looking at Cleveland. Now, it's easy to pick the Lakers. I mean, you know, they made it to the finals last year, and they without Andrew Bynum. You add Andrew Bynum, which is like adding a first round lottery pick to a team, and there you go. So it's easy for me to pick the Lakers. But Cleveland, you know, ever since LeBron James took Cleveland to the playoffs a couple of years back in 06, they played extremely well in the playoffs. I mean, you go back to that season, they take Detroit to seven games, a Detroit team that everybody thought was unbeatable that particular season and was going to run away with the NBA championship. They take them to seven games and should have beat them, had them on the ropes in game six, could not get an offensive rebound. Couldn't get a defensive rebound in that particular game. Fast forward a year later, again, they meet up with Detroit in the conference finals this time and beat Detroit in six games. Of course, they got embarrassed in the NBA finals and had no business, you know, they had no business beating, and really had no business being in the NBA finals against San Antonio. It was a bad matchup, and San Antonio did what San Antonio does to a team of that caliber. They destroyed them. Last year, Cleveland goes against a Boston team that won 66 games and ended up winning the NBA championship. They take them to game seven, and by far and away was Boston's toughest opponent. And now I'm looking at this and I'm saying to myself, I mean, this team, you know, they play great defense. They have arguably the most dynamic player in the league. I still think Kobe Bryant's the best, but LeBron is catching them very fast as we speak. LeBron is catching Kobe Bryant as far as that title as world's best player. And some of the pieces that they've added, you know, that getting Mo Williams was a big acquisition for them. You get a guy who on a night where LeBron might not have as far as scoring, that'll be the rarest of nights. But you get a guy with you get a night where LeBron shot is off. Mo Williams can get you 20 to 25 points easy. He can make outside shots. LeBron's going to draw double, triple teams, and there's a point guard that can make shots. And from a Cleveland perspective, it also strengthens that bench. Look at that bench now. You can bring Delonte West off the bench, a Daniel Gibson off the bench, you know, a Pavlovic off the bench. So I think Cleveland is ready. I think Cleveland is ready to win the Eastern Conference now. I really think, forget about a year from now, 2 years from now. I think right now, this year, that they're ready to win the Eastern Conference. I absolutely believe that they're ready to win right now. And I like them. I like them against Boston. And I have all the respect in the world for the Boston Celtics. But remember this about Boston. They're a year older. And I don't know if Boston can match the kind of intensity and the kind of motivation that they had last year. I don't think they can. I really don't. I mean, I think that they put everything into winning a championship last year. It basically almost was all or nothing. I understand that before this process started with Boston, that this is probably a 2-year window, and this would be probably the last year of that particular window. But last year, everything went right for them. The chemistry was perfect. You know, they had guys that produced. Rondo improved, you know, steadily. And then you had a guy like James Posey, who, again, that's a big loss. That was a major loss for Boston, not re-signing him and him going over to the Western Conference to New Orleans. You know, you don't replace guys like that. I mean, this guy is a intangible player who makes big shots and knows how to win. Those guys are not easy to find, and is willing to defer to your superstars and your all stars, and do all the dirt work, and do all that necessary things that championship teams have to have. You don't replace guys like that. I mean, he's basically a poor man's Robert Horry. But I just don't see the Celtics having that same motivation. Now, it will be good enough. They're still, based on their talent, they'll still be good enough, I feel, to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. But as far as winning the East, I think they come up a little bit short. As far as the West is concerned, listen, you know, to me it's simple with the Lakers. I mean, you have the deepest roster in basketball. I mean, you're talking about having a bench where you can come off the bench with Lamar Odom, Jordan Farmore, Ramadovic, Vujicic, Luke Walton. I mean that's a big time. I mean that's like having a borderline starting five. I mean, they're as deep as any team in basketball. And again, with Andrew Bynum, was watching him last night. He looks healthy. He looks fully healthy. He looks fully recovered from that knee. Can he stay healthy for a full 82 games? That remains to be seen. But Andrew Bynum comes back and gets you 10 to 12 points a game and, say, 9 to 10 rebounds and box a couple of shots. I don't see how you beat the Lakers. If the Lakers' biggest question mark is going to be Kobe Bryant's legs, you know, Kobe Bryant's age, or Kobe Bryant's, you know, wearing down possibly because of the long summer, then you're in pretty good shape. If Kobe Bryant's the question mark, you are in pretty good shape from a Laker perspective. I wouldn't worry about Kobe Bryant. I know he had a scare earlier this week with the hyperextended knee. And by the way, can the NBA, a memo to the NBA, can they please cut down these preseason games? You don't need to play a million preseason games. The season's already long enough as it is. You know, including the playoffs, teams have the opportunity to play over 100 games. But I would not worry about Kobe Bryant. As far as the rest of the Western Conference, I like Houston a lot. I think the Artest, again, they're coming off their bench. Brett Barry, Luther Head, Shane Battier, Carl Landry, off their bench. That's their bench. Not the starters. That's their bench. I like Houston a lot. Artest adds toughness to the team, and he also adds another guy, and I hate to say this, but, go check the facts. Tracy McGrady is good to miss 15 to 20 games. You can mark it down. You can book it right here, right now. Tracy McGrady will miss 15 to 20 games this year. He misses those games. Who do you have to replace his scoring? You can have a Ron Artest, who is capable of getting you 18 to 20 points easily. Easily. I mean, and all, you know, they that Houston is loaded. Houston is absolutely loaded, not only so much with talent, with defensive talent, the pieces fit. It all depends on Artest. I mean, it's a risky move. Taking on a guy as volatile as Artest with his history, his pedigree, it's a move that they have. If you're a Houston Rockets, it's a move that you probably had to make. Yeah, they have not gotten out of the first round in a long time. Yao Ming, Tracy McGrady have never gotten out of the first round. It's a move that I probably would have made if I'm in their position. You don't know how many years Tracy McGrady has left. Tracy McGrady is only 29 years old, but his body probably is about 34, 35 based on all his injury problems he's had over the years. So again, like I said, he's good to miss 15 or 20 games. So I really like Houston a lot, and I would not be surprised if Houston comes out of the West. If you ask me to pick one team other than the Lakers, it probably would be the Houston Rockets. One team that I think that Sports Illustrated missed the boat on a little bit is the New Orleans Hornets. They have New Orleans fifth. And, you know, listen, you add a year's worth of experience to that team, and then you add James Posey. I think that's another very dangerous team in the Western Conference. Are they as good as the Lakers? Probably not. Are they as good as Houston? Probably not. But they are. I would not be shocked if they beat either one of those teams in the playoffs. I mean, Chris Paul is only going to get better. And again, you really can't put a price tag on what James Posey brings to that team. The experience, the big game experience. If he can score, the guy can, you know, he can make open threes. He can defend multiple positions. and he knows how to win. He knows how to win. And you cannot, you can't put a, you know, you really can't measure that by any stat, by any, there's no stat line that can measure knowing and understanding how to win in the NBA or how to win in sports in general. So you have a guy like Posey that will bring his two championship rings to a team that frankly didn't know how to win last year and still took the defending NBA champions at that time to seven games. I mean, that team probably overachieved a little bit last year. So that's a team that you need to keep your eye on. From if you're in the Western Conference, I think the Eastern Conference is going to be improved. I don't think it's as good as the West, but overall, I think you look at teams like Toronto, Orlando, Philadelphia, Chicago, Miami. All those teams should be better with some of the moves that they make. Toronto to me is a great unknown factor in the Eastern Conference because if Jermaine O'Neal plays up to his capabilities and is healthy, that's his biggest problem is he's always injured. If he plays up to his capabilities, that team will be very dangerous and very tough to deal with in come postseason. You put him on the front line with Chris Bosh. I don't think anybody in the Eastern Conference can match that front line, you know, power forward center. I don't think anybody can match that in the Eastern Conference if those two guys are on the floor healthy. So Toronto is a great unknown in the Eastern Conference. As far as the West, you want to look for a team as the unknown. I look at the Portland Trailblazers. I think the Portland Trailblazers will make the playoffs, but they could be a team that could be extremely dangerous if Greg Oden develops quickly. I mean, they have a lot of scoring. They have some good perimeter players. Brandon Roy is going to be the next big time guard in this league. Aldridge is a very good player. Blake is a steady point guard. They have some good, they have okay depth coming off the bench. Not a great bench, but a pretty good bench. Their bench will be much better once Martell Wesley gets back from his injury. That is a team. I'm telling you right now, if you're the Los Angeles Lakers, if you're the San Antonio Spurs, if you're the Boston Celtics, Cleveland, any contending team that has a legitimate chance to win a championship right now, You better win your championships right now because Portland is coming and they're coming fast. That team, Kelvin Pritchard, is a bona fide superstar as a general manager. The guy did nothing but make great moves for the past couple of years since he took over that GM spot for Portland. And that is the team of the future. That team was going to win multiple championships. Greg Oden does not have to be a dominant player for them to win championships. He doesn't have to be. He does not have to be the next great center. If he is, you know, look out. I mean, then you're talking about an absolute dynasty. That team, regardless of, I think Greg Oden is going to be a very good player in this league, a guy who will get you 15 and 10 blocks and shots and has a chance to be Bill Russell-like. And I dare compare him to Bill Russell. But, I mean, Bill Russell-like in terms of what he does and his impact on the game. And that's all they need. All they need for Oden to do is draw some double teams, block some shots and rebound the basketball, and they will be good to go for the future. Keep your eye as an NBA fan on the trade deadline because there's one player, and I know he's a pain in the neck, and he's an absolute head case, but he is still one of the most talented players in the league that possibly can be moved. And of course, I'm talking about Rasheed Wallace. Rasheed Wallace has an expiring contract of $13.7 million this year. He'll be a free agent after this year, and that is a guy that can tip the balance of power in the Eastern Conference, definitely, and he can tip the balance of power in the Western Conference. If you are a team, you know, I'll give you a perfect example because this guy also has an expiring contract. If the Lamar Odom thing does not work in L.A. with him being the sixth man, they could easily move him for Rasheed Wallace. And I'm sure, and Detroit, I'm sure Detroit would make the move considering that Lamar Odom also has an expiring contract. All Detroit wants to do is probably let Rasheed Wallace's contract is either trade Wallace and get back an expiring contract, or let Rasheed Wallace let him play out this year and let his contract get off the books. And he is a guy that can change the landscape for a franchise for a conference in terms of winning an NBA championship. He still is, again, and he's a head case, and he drives you crazy with him taking crazy 3 points. But the guy can still defend with the best big man in the league, and he can still, and he knows how to win. Knows how to win. He's won a championship. Detroit has done nothing but win as far as making 6 straight conference finals. So over the course of the trade deadline, that name, that could be whoever lands him. If he doesn't, chances are he probably won't move, but whoever lands him, and I don't know which team would, you know, whether it be the Lakers, whether it be a Utah, who knows? I mean, you never know. It's kind of too early to, to kind of forecast where he will land if he does get moved at all. But that guy can change it. He can change the whole landscape of the NBA season in just one swoop. And again, I'm looking forward to the NBA season. Again, I like the Lakers and I like Cleveland. How great would that be, a LeBron and Kobe Bryant NBA Finals? Two guys in the prime of their careers, well, one of them in the prime. LeBron hasn't even reached his prime of their careers going at it. Two of the league's two biggest stars. I'm sure the NBA and David Stern would love to see that. There's one other thing that I would like to get to, and I'm surprised I have enough time to get to it, but I absolutely had to discuss it. I had to talk about it because, you know, it's just something that was on my mind for the last couple of days, especially when it happened. And of course, Arizona Wildcats fans will know that Lou Olson, the great coach, former coach of the Arizona Wildcats, resigned a couple of days ago. And, you know, again, this is a perfect example of the players, college coaches, being able to do whatever they want, and the players having basically no freedom whatsoever. Lou Olson, and let me give you a timeline. Lou Olson last year took a sabbatical. Health reasons, for personal reasons, obviously. Took a sabbatical, and Kevin O'Neill coached for the majority of for the rest of the season, basically, up until the point of the NCAA tournament, and Olson took over after that. But Olson takes a sabbatical and decides to come back for another year to coach Arizona. Now, mind you, if you have a son who signed the letter of intent for Arizona, he's stuck there. He's stuck in Arizona regardless of what Lou Olson does, okay? He's stuck there. Lou Olson retires and he stays. He has no choice but to stay there. Once you sign that letter of intent, that is what it is. If you decide to leave, transfer, you lose a year of eligibility as a player. But, yeah, a Lou Olson or any other coach can choose to either retire or they can choose to take another job. They don't have to lose any years in terms of not coaching. Coaches can do whatever they want. They can take another job, leave. Players, you have to transfer, you'll lose a year. Coaches get paid millions of dollars, shoe contracts. Players have to be under the table illegally. I mean, these coaches can do whatever they want. Olson leaves this program high and dry. You know, he retires basically a month before the season. Well, a couple weeks before the season is going to start. And what do you say? You know, what do you do if you're an Arizona recruit? Excuse me, if you're a freshman at Arizona. When you signed the letter of intent, you thought that Lou Olson was going to be the coach. What do you do? Do you transfer and lose a year of eligibility, or do you stay and play for a coach that you did not anticipate playing in Russ Purnell that you did not anticipate playing for before when you signed the letter of intent? Olson would have made this thing a lot easier had he just resigned at the end of last year. You give your recruits an opportunity to make their decisions. And you give a player like Chase Bullinger, who chose, by the way, to skip the NBA, in terms of entering the draft to come back for another year to help Lute Olson win basketball games. Now let's make no mistake about it. Lute Olson, Bollinger wanted to upgrade his draft status. Okay, he would have been a first round pick, but he probably had a chance. He has an opportunity this year to be a lottery pick. And this is an ever-going theme in the NCAA. The players always get the shaft. They always get the shaft. You wonder why players leave early. You wonder why players take money illegally. It's because they're being used like pieces of meat, basically, in terms of the NCAA. CBS has a $6 billion deal to cover the NCAA tournament. Do you think a player sees any of that money? No. Absolutely not. At least, can we please stop calling them student athletes? Can we at least eliminate that title? They're not student athletes. They're athletes who happen to be students. And again, coaches can do whatever they want. And yeah, Lute, I'm not here to beat up on Lute Olson. Over the past few years, he lost his wife to cancer a few years back. Went through a messy divorce. And allegedly had some health related issues, but he did a bad job with this. That's all there is to it. And if you do have health, related issues, and if that is the reason why you retired, then just come out and say it. You're 74 years old. Nobody's gonna be surprised if Lute Olson retires because of health issues. Because the guy is 74 years old. There are a lot of people who are 74 years old that have health issues. You're 74. I mean, it makes no sense how the program, not only the players get left high and dry, but the program, you leave Arizona high and dry. That point, he just set that program back about a good 2 or 3 years as far as their prospective recruits. Guys who thought about top recruits, who thought about going to Arizona now, you know where they're going? They're going to Memphis. They're going to North Carolina. They're going to Kansas. They're going to Duke. They're going to Connecticut. They're not going to Arizona now. Because right now, there's absolutely no stability in the program right now. Lute Olson retires last year. They give Arizona plenty of time to establish a successor worthy of that job. Wes Purnell was an assistant coach at Arizona State for 8 years under Rob Evans. Wes Purnell might be the greatest thing since sliced bread. Who knows at this point? We don't know anything about Wes Purnell as a head coach. But right now, Wes Purnell is not a big-time coach as we speak right now. And again, I'm tired of seeing these coaches, especially amongst the college ranks, be able to do whatever they want. Fine, if they want to bounce from job to job and retire just out of the blue, case in point, i.e. Bob Knight retiring before the season ends in February, which actually is worse than what Lute Olson did. I mean, gee, you can't even finish the season. Fine, let them do it. But if a player wants to go out there and transfer without losing a year of eligibility, then allow him to do it. Well, if a player wants to renege on his letter of intent because of a coach leaving, then allow him to move on to another university that has the allowable number of scholarships available. Allow him to give the player the same benefit that you give these coaches. That's all I'm trying to say, basically, with this. That's all I'm trying to say with this. These players are making millions for these universities, millions upon millions. And this is how they get treated. I'd like to thank everybody who tuned in to listen to the program. Next weekend, again, I will wrap up the World Series. I'll definitely get into the NFL more. Didn't do any NFL today, but I definitely will do that coming up next week. College football, we'll look ahead to next weekend's big matchups in college football and other sports stories going on. We'll have an entire baseball wrap up. Not only look back on the World Series, but we'll do a baseball wrap up. Again, thank you for joining me. Remember, next week, 10:30 a.m. I'll be on every Saturday at 10:30 a.m. You want to call in? It'll be 347-215-6180. I appreciate your time. And again, I appreciate any feedback you may have. Drop me a message on on my blogradio.com website or webpage and give me feedback on the show. I've enjoyed your company over the last 60 minutes or so, and I'll see you next week. So long.